Look, I love Bo. My coaches love him. The cheerleaders love him. The fans love him. Everybody loves him. And then, how come none of his teammates went to his birthday party? And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, a show about the Cleveland Browns. No, I'm just kidding. It's the best show in MMA. And listen, I never introduce these things, but as we tape, it's draft day, just like one of my favorite movies with Kevin Costner. We're getting set for it. They're in Cleveland. I love the Browns. I love MMA. And as always, I'm one half of your hosting duo, Craig Allen. And as I always say in the prediction videos, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram if you so feel incensed, at Craig Allen FNP. But with me, as always, the other half of Early Stoppage. You can find him sometimes at SM Corner Man, sometimes at Sunday Morning Corner Man, Mr. John Franklin. John, you have a little bit of liquid in front of you. Do you have any foods with you on this episode?
I've learned my lesson. I will raise the level of professionalism on this podcast by not eating. I ate beforehand. My apologies to all of those who would have me eat any other time than on a podcast. I don't know what came over me, probably hunger. But yeah, here we are, ready to roll and fed.
Well, let's hand the reins back over to you. You got the BJPenn.com shirt on today. I remember your thoughts on Santeria from last week. So I'm looking forward to that.
On this episode of Early Stoppage, we talk BKFC's dimes, Cowboy in the Nightmare's beef, and Conor McGregor's paper. But we begin with the biggest star in combat sports, Nick Diaz. I don't know what it is about these Diaz boys, but we can't help ourselves. Nick Diaz's appearance at UFC 261 has the Underground Whisper Network all abuzz, Craig. So the word on the street is Nick might get Khamzat Chimaev. Craig, we'll talk later about how Nick is able to come and go as he pleases, going from being completely off the grid right into a high-profile fight. But for now, the question on the table is, do you like this Khamzat Chimaev-Nick Diaz fight?
Who's a better driver, Nick Diaz? Because I mostly see him, you know, commuting by foot. Usually it's like, hey, I'm on the strip. Oh, look, it's Nick Diaz, because he doesn't really drive. And then Khamzat totally wrecked that Mercedes this week. So I don't know. I mean, the jury's out on that one. Hopefully we don't have to come to that. But when I look at this fight, I think it's silly, right? Because, I mean, Khamzat Chimaev, biggest hype train we've seen in a long time, other than Kevin Holland. That crashed and burned in 2021. Do we expect Khamzat's kind of star to totally fade out? I think the whole long-haul COVID thing, it really did stall a lot of the progress that he had going on. But, you know, you kind of look at this matchup and you think, well, geez, you know, Nick Diaz was going to come back. Who could he fight? Well, hey, Diego Sanchez needs a dance partner, right? Would Josh Fabia kind of sign off on that fight? I don't think so. And as we record right now, there's some weird stuff going on in the life of Diego Sanchez and his Instagram account. But all I have to say is I'm not about this fight. I think it's really silly because you have a young up-and-comer that's undefeated, that's been a buzzsaw through good competition. I mean, I myself, and I know Matt, and I can speak for him in this case, we were high on Reese McKee. They kind of threw him to the wolves early. And then you look at the other two fights that Khamzat had. I mean, Jiro Mearshart, pretty good fighter, right? John Phillips, was he a good captain? Was Captain Phillips great? No. John Phillips, UFC fighter. I mean, he beat Alan Amadovsky one time. Like, apart from that, not that great. So for Khamzat, he definitely needs a step up. But we were originally looking at Leon Edwards as a step up. And now you get a guy that hasn't won in what? 7-8 years? Like, it just seems really silly to me to go from Leon Edwards, pretty much top of the mountain, all the way to Nick Diaz, who's been irrelevant in, you know, combat sports and like actually practicing and actually fighting in an octagon. It's a weird one for me. I get it. Big money, but I still don't get it.
Well, you know, I think that Nick Diaz checks a couple boxes, which are important. First of all, he's a cheat code in the sense that he's the thing that you do to go from level one to level seven, right? So all the time that we lost with Chimaev being sick, you get to make up just by beating Nick Diaz, because for some reason, and we'll get to this later, Nick is not really someone who, you know, we ascribe certain things to Nick, and if you can get through Nick, it's always going to be an accomplishment no matter what his recent history with fighting is. Last time Nick got a win, it was against that guy, BJ Penn. So it's been a minute, and that was 2011, which was 10 years ago. Yeah, I think that they're seeing – listen, I think Nick's durability is going to be a check mark for Hamzat because he finishes people early. I think Nick's ability to strike is going to be – with withstand punishment and return it. So I think that's what they're looking to do here. They're trying to use Nick's name and Nick's sort of MO to give Hamzat that push to be like, okay, listen, he can beat guys who are old heads. He's not just running through guys. He could beat a has-been, not just never wases. So I think they're looking for him to knock off a has-been as opposed to a bunch of never wases.
Well, I want to move on. And just before I do, I mean, you kind of missed the gap, but you know, when you were playing video games on the PS2, like, would you go out and buy the cheat code books? Because when I was a kid, I was a cheat code book kind of guy, like a real cheater.
No, I wouldn't.
Oh, okay. All right.
I wasn't great at the game, so I didn't. I was like a sports game guy, and they didn't have cheat codes really.
Oh, yes, they did. All right. We'll move on, John. And, you know, we'll go from a guy that, you know, if we're saying has been with Diaz, John Jones in an odd spot right now in his career. And one of the biggest stories from this week is that John Jones split from his longtime management in first round management. The Cows were there through thick and thin, from title to arrests and then back again. And it seems like with the Ngannou negotiations, they really skewed things between Jones and the Cows. But if John's going to pursue new management, who do you see him linking up with? And will this benefit kind of what he's trying to do moving forward, splitting from first round?
Well, I hate to answer a question with a question, and I won't exactly pose this question right back to you, but I want to put it into the atmosphere here so that you can sort of think about it as you ready your response, which is, why split from the Cowboys, right? Like, what is, if they've been there through thick and thin, what is the reason why he split with them? The only thing that makes sense to me is that it gives John an excuse to maybe eat a little humble pie and back off the hardened stance that he was taking with the UFC. Like, this is the number, that's it. If he's under new representation, what he can do is maybe have a lower number that's a little closer to the UFC's number, but maybe go off in different directions and find that money elsewhere. So how does that happen? Well, the obvious choice for next management would be Ali Abdelaziz, because he manages all the best fighters in the world. Obviously, Ali is looking to replace some of that Khabib money if Khabib's no longer fighting, in terms of the purse money and all that stuff. So John Jones makes sense. I think what makes sense for John Jones would be to move more towards like some Hollywood type management. And maybe that is the way that John can say, well, you know, I came a little closer to the UFC's number, but I'm with this new management team. I'm going to be on some TV shows. I'm going to be doing some more endorsements. And he can enlarge his brand. And then maybe it's easier to swallow the fact that he's not going to get the money he wants from the UFC.
I mean, weird things are going on my screen. It says that I don't have Wi-Fi, but I'll go through it. I mean, the whole thing went black and I was still here. But to me, when I look at John Jones, and now same thing happens for John Franklin on my screen, that there's ghosts out there. It's tough, right? Because you've been with the same management company all the way through. They met your goals. They met your financial requirements. And now we come to this Ngannou fight. And listen, again, we're advocates for fighter pay. We seem to talk about it every single week. We want to see John Jones get paid what he's worth, but we also want to see those undercard fighters. And if you saw any of those, and again, alleged, reported, whatever wording you want to use, but if you did see some of those payouts, and the other thing too, you have to take them with a grain of salt from UFC 261, because if it was in Florida with the Florida commissions, they don't have to report the true fighter pays. But I went up and down that list through the prelims, and the list that I saw, it was 10 and 10, 10 and 10, 12 and 12, 10 and 10, all the way until you got up really high at the end of the prelims into the main card. How much did that make? I mean, as far as the live gate's concerned, as far as the pay-per-view sales weren't anything spectacular. I don't know if we expect them to be so, but to have that many people in attendance, to have Machine Gun Kelly in attendance, like, they did a pretty good job. So if you're in John Jones' corner, you want to maximize your value. There's two people out there that can do that very well. One, we haven't really talked about, and I don't think he's being talked about enough in MMA. And maybe his fighters haven't been winning lately. And it's Vayner Sports with Gary Vaynerchuk. And maybe you're not a big Gary V fan, and that's just fine. But I looked at some of the names that he was able to sign just right off of the hop when he decided he was going to move into MMA. Tony Ferguson, not on the winning end of his last fight. Eddie Alvarez, definitely didn't win last night. Vitor Belfort, yikes. Chris Weidman, yikes. Uriah Faber, yikes. Curtis Blades, yikes. That's an article that I read. That's from July 2020. So all of those fighters have lost their last fights, unless I'm mistaken. I think Gary V brings that heightened sense that, listen, we can maximize on this guy from a financial sense, and they can really help move John Jones along. Gary Vaynerchuk probably has the biggest portfolio, the most diverse portfolio out of any of the management companies that are out there right now, and the highest star potential. But if we're just talking in terms of just MMA, I think you're right. I mean, dominance really has all of the best fighters, or a lot of the best fighters. Again, you can pick and choose fighters that have lost recently. Lance Palmer didn't look too hot last week against Bobby Jenkins. But, I mean, having the Gaethjes, the Khabibs, and so on and so forth, just even linked to him, and Kamaru Usman as well, that could be a good move. For me, I'd say Vayner Sports gets a little awkward where he also has Stipe Miocic, who also lost his last fight, so maybe that's a trend and John shouldn't go there. But I do think like that's probably the right move.
So what are we going to have John Jones doing? Buying clothes at Goodwill and setting up eBay and Amazon accounts? Is that Gary's game? No, I'm just giving Gary a little shit. Listen, I'm with you. I think that a diverse portfolio, I think that sort of moving away from I just think that Ali knows how to manage stars. And you have to find somebody that if you want John to be a star, like he has big name guys and knows how to tweet from their accounts. No, he knows how to give them the things. Listen, I will say this. Ali Abdelaziz has a very checkered and questionable past. But the guys that are with him are loyal to him. And the thing that I cannot reconcile, I've met Ali. He was a nice guy to me. But the things that I can't reconcile is who I have heard that he is, his reputation, and the guys who are willing to vouch for him. Makes no sense to me, right? Like who he is, it would make no sense that a guy like Frankie Edgar would vouch for him, but he does. So, you know, maybe it's just because he makes Frankie money. I don't know.
Yeah, right, and then, you know, those guys are willing to do a lot for the money too. Like it gets dicey. And to me, John Jones he doesn't seem to me like a guy that's easily influenced that way. To me, he doesn't seem so. I don't know him personally, but I guess we'll see.
I agree. We move on to, we kind of stay in the heavyweight division. Heavyweight MMA is a weird game, Craig. Big guys throwing leather in 2005 was like chicks digging a long ball 10 years before that. But nowadays, a 230-pound heavyweight is cool, apparently until Stipe Miocic decided that it wasn't cool, and he needs to bulk up now to beat Francis Ngannou in the trilogy. Now, we've seen this before for you MMA junior historians. Frank Mir, once upon a time, put on a lot of weight because Brock Lesnar was king of the king of the jungle in the heavyweight division, and he thought he had to gain weight to deal with Brock. Ended up not helping him, but listen. Realistically, well, theoretically, the heavyweight division is 207 pounds to 265 pounds. Realistically, it's about 225 or 230. To 265 pounds. But there's a lot of wiggle room there, especially when these guys are swinging for the bleachers. So do you think that Stipe putting on the weight is going to make a difference? Do you think he's just doing that to do what Conor's doing and sort of sell a fight that we already saw and say, no, it's going to be different this time because of this? Same thing Masvidal did. No, it's going to be different this time because I had a longer training camp. What do you think Stipe's play is here?
It's a weird one because we talked about it before. I mean, you look at some of the fighters that have lost weight. Like, look at Chris Daukaus since he's come into the UFC. Continues to lose weight, and he looks great out there. And it's worked for him. And you look at Stipe, so from 246 to 234, is it that big of a difference? Do you really gain that much more strength out of the extra 13 pounds? I'm sure you do. But with that durability, like everything just kind of gets thrown in a little bit of flux. And then, like I said, if you look into it, his last, what, three fights, 230.5, 233, 234. It worked for him against Cormier twice. He beat Francis, but Francis was still new in the game. He was still throwing windmills and hoping everything landed. And now John Franklin goes black again because StreamYard's working weird tonight. But if you look at it, I mean, for Stipe, it worked for him until it didn't. And now we're just going to throw a dart at a board and hope it hits. Like, Francis has made improvements through his game. No matter what Brendan Schaub wanted you to believe before he fought for the second time in the rematch. So I don't know how much of a difference it's going to make. I really, really don't.
Well, I mean, I think that the game plan becomes clear, right? You're not putting on 20 pounds to stand with him. You're putting on 20 pounds because the first time you tried to take him down, he shook it off. And you pretty clearly should have a technique advantage. So if he was able to see through your technique advantage and just muscle you out of that takedown, then maybe you felt like you didn't have enough, you know, you were a little too light in the ass to take him down. So you're trying to not be light in the ass. I get it. But I think that then now it makes the, you know, with Cormier, it was the opposite. He knew that he was a good enough wrestler to at least stay somewhat standing or at least goad Cormier into feeling more confident into his with his hands than maybe he should have, and he needed to be quicker. So I'm going to defer to Chael Sonnen, and we'll talk about Chael later, but I watched a video on this, and Chael said, listen, Stipe has earned the benefit of the doubt, and he's done such a good job in coming back off losses, changing the game plan with his strategy. So if Stipe tells me that 20 pounds are going to make the difference, I don't know who to believe over him. I mean, that guy seems to know. Stipe is this guy. This is what I love about Stipe Miocic. He doesn't know MMA. He knows himself. He knows his game. He's not in some super diverse camp. He's not the guy that's going to sit at the end of a desk and analyze the night of fights. I'm sure he could, but he knows himself and what he needs to be successful. He knows his own timeline. He knows how many fires he can fight before he needs to get serious again. And so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt like Chael.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. It'll be interesting, too, to see the way that that division progresses. But we'll move on from there. And, John, at UFC 264 at the top, we've got Poirier-McGregor 3, the fight that I'm most excited for all year. The first one, I ate it up. The second one, I can't get enough of it. Now in the co-main, we've got Gilbert and Steven. Question is, are Gilbert and Steven going to be fighting for a possibility of a belt or a shot at the belt at UFC 264. Do you see Wonderboy and Dorino having any shot above a Colby Covington or maybe a dark horse, maybe a Nate Diaz in this welterweight division this summer?
I don't think they should get it over Colby. But I will say this. Well, it depends on how you look at it. We had a conversation, I remember, I would say a couple of months ago, about some of these guys, they take the L and they get forgotten. And that we didn't want that to happen to Gilbert Burns. Well, a little bit, he took the L and he's been forgotten. Because once you get the W, you know, we're trying. Listen, the Kamaru Usman GSP vibes are huge right now. And everybody's saying, you know, Usman needs to do what GSP did, which is, you know, beat the competition and then lap them. Usman said it himself. You know, Chael said, I'm going to quote Chael a lot today. But Chael said, you know, you beat them all and then you beat them all again. Anderson did it. Jones did it. GSP did it.
Demetrius
Johnson almost did it. So I can see from that perspective, but I think that, you know, it wasn't too long ago that Wonderboy Thompson was losing to Anthony Pettis. So he's looking good these last couple. And listen, if he beats Burns, he deserves the shot. I just don't think either one deserves it over Colby with this one caveat. Here's the only caveat to Burns. Burns wobbled Usman early. And we haven't seen a lot of that from Usman. So from that perspective, yeah, he does, because he did put him on ice skates a little bit, deserve maybe another shot. But if you can't get through Thompson, then hell no.
It's a weird division right now. And I've seen on the Underground Whisper networks, the Twitters, the Reddits, wherever, Facebook, you know, where your grandmother talks about casual MMA. She's high on Conor McGregor selling a steak in Proper 12. So shouts to grandma. But like, when I look at this division, you look at the lineage of people beating Tyron Woodley. Who had the best performance against Woodley? I think it was Gilbert Burns, but Vicente Luque looked pretty good. Wonderboy had those fights a long time ago, but the conversations going on the social medias that I've seen, and again, weird corners, so take this for what it's worth, but a lot of people want to see Wonderboy get that fight with Kamaru Usman. They think that he has the striking style that can cause him fits, and we all know, I mean, you look at the fight that Wonderboy had his last time out against Jeff Neal. He looked amazing. all of these guys at the top of the division, even Gilbert Burns in that loss, and yeah, he got finished, so what? He rocked Usman, like you said. So all of these guys up near there that have at least won their last fights have done so very impressively. Colby Covington looked great against Woodley. So did Luque. Burns looked good against Usman, looked good in his fights before that too. And Wonderboy looked really good against Jeff Neal. So for me, I think it's a great fight. You have it in a co-main event slot like this, and Covington doesn't really have anything going on. So for me, you got to announce Covington Usman in this window before UFC 264, which I feel like they'll do. And I didn't get the chance to pop in and out like I normally do with the recap show because you guys went twice as long as anybody would want. But if I can say anything about it, man, I mean, Kamaru Usman looked amazing. Like that guy's really doing some stuff. And I think for GSP, he's got to stop doing these GQ spots and these spots with other, you know, different YouTube. Come over to Fight Night Picks if you want, but stop doing these spots with your hair all done up like Craig Allen talking about old karate movies. Like, what's GSP's plan here? Like, we always talk about that. What's his play? What's GSP's play going on like Variety Magazine and GQ? You're not like, I don't get it. And he's out there every day. I check YouTube every John. It's not even a Canadian thing. Every single damn day, everywhere I look, it's GSP, and it's probably the algorithm. I'm almost done. It's probably the algorithm.
I would say it's the algorithm.
It's like that old tattoo song. You know how many big Russian songs, like Russian pop songs, were big in the States or in North America? Not a lot of them. All the things you said, all the things you said, running through my head, running through my head, running through my head.
This took GSP. A turn.
Everywhere I go, GSP.
You know, I agree. So maybe he's trying to diversify. Maybe he wants to be a model. Maybe he wants to be an actor. Who knows? Give the guy a break. You know, I forgot even what the hell we were talking about. So I'm like completely lost. I'm with you. Yeah, they should announce the you wanted what? You wanted Usman Covington?
Yeah, announce the rematch and then have this as a number one contender. Boom, you set everything up and we're into fall by then.
And we move on. Craig, BKFC has now signed Rachel Ostovich to add to Pearl Gonzalez, to add to Paige VanZant. There seems to be a theme here. I don't have a problem with it, but I guess my question to you is BKFC just trying to sign every dime piece fighter there is? Is there some sort of thing where it's like, okay, they're already famous. They're famous for fighting. Guys are, you know, they're thirst trapping everybody, so we might as well take advantage of that. Or do you think, what's the connection here? Why do that? Is it just because they're available? Do they think they have some fighting prowess, or are they just signing them because they're dimes?
Well, I mean, you know, you go over there, you get to hold the mic, and every now and again, you get to hear somebody go, "And I am a fucking feeling." What a weird moment in combat sports. Listen, I'm sure the money's good. And if they're paying, you're going to take it. And, you know, you look at Pearl Gonzalez, she's carved out a good career. Wins and losses don't, you know, matter in this conversation I'm trying to put forward. But with the UFC, built her brand, went back to Invicta. She's had a good career with Invicta. And there's been wins there. With Rachel Ostovich, it's a sub 500 record in MMA. But hey, if you can make this work, I mean, you're 0-0 in bare knuckle boxing, right, John? So it's a clean slate. Why not give it a try? Have the rematch with Paige VanZant. And for Paige VanZant, I mean, I think she posted on, where was it, Twitter, Instagram today, of her hitting the pad saying, hey, I'm making the comeback. Looking forward to my second time out with BKFC. So any publicity is good publicity. And I'm sure that VanZant, Britton Hart fight did quite well for them. Fucking feelings aside. So, it's a good move if you're looking, if there's an opportunity to make a paycheck. And they've got a big card, depending on when the show comes out. But this Friday, they've got a pretty big card. I mean, hey, Ellsworth Main's, like, other heavyweight son has a big fight coming up. Chris Sorrow's got a big one. John, who's Ellsworth Main's other big son, big heavyweight?
No idea.
Are you kidding me?
Tim Sylvia?
Yeah, Tim Sylvia.
Okay, I didn't know it was Ellsworth.
Yes.
No, I thought it was someplace else. It doesn't matter.
He doesn't live in Maine now, but yeah.
So, you know, when I look at this thing, I have some crazy theories about marketing and how people choose to do certain things. The fact that it's bare knuckle and they're, you know, attractive women. There's some sort of connection there. You know,
so I would say BKFC, I think that there's, I just don't know if these were the best fighters available or if they're making the case that
they're running their own little kind of triller outfit and saying that we're only going to do cards so often. So if we can sort of bring everything together, we don't have to make a whole division. We just have to have people who are, because we've talked about this before, these women are much more famous for being fighters than if they were just attractive women, right? So there always has to be that fighting component for them to keep that level of fame. And I think that the bare knuckle brand allows them to do that. And I think that's why it works for bare knuckle. It works for them. And I'm sure that they, for bare knuckle, they just look at it like, okay, how much are they bringing in and how much we have to put out for them? And I think it's probably, it probably works out financially.
The funny thing about bare knuckle, and this is as long as I'll go on about bare knuckle, because I don't like it anymore. And I've talked about this at length, but there's so many new Fight Night Picks fans, and A, we appreciate you, and B, we appreciate you stopping by early stoppage, but you probably weren't tuning in 2018, because if you were, you're one of like 150 people, and there weren't a lot of those people. And we were on a Canadian like radio type show thing, and there were even less people there. But my point is, we used to have to do segments for that. And on a Friday, it was once a month, you had to do like an all-day radio show. And it was easy because I was in school and bare knuckle was starting to get big. They already had the first BKFC. WBKFF was coming up. Phil Baroni was fighting Chris Lieben. Phil Baroni wants to fight everybody on Twitter and their brother and son and the entire lineage. But I got excited about it. We had a lot of great guests on. Tony Lopez. Who else do we have? Christina Marks was another one of the guests. And we really got into it and we started talking about, you know, the technique involved with bare knuckle. And the thing is, right, you don't want to hit somebody in the forehead because you're going to break your hand. You don't want to hit somebody really like in the cheekbone. You could break your hand. You want to go body shot. You want to do different things. The whole point of this, John, you watch these bare knuckle fights and nobody even gives a damn about any of that. And they just swing for the fences like they had gloves on anyway and they break their hands. It's just a weird, weird sport. And you'd think they'd take the technique, but they don't. They don't sweat the technique. So, John, with that, we'll move on. And Endeavor's IPO launched today, and it was priced at $24 a share, and it closed up 5% on this first day. As a result, I've seen a lot of UFC fans out there on the social medias. They're stoked to own a piece of their favorite. Well, I'm assuming your favorite isn't like Cage Rage or Affliction, but their favorite promotion. How is this going to affect the UFC's business, if it does at all?
Well, I need to do my homework on this, I will admit, because I need to figure out what the upside is, because here's the downside. Your financials are going to become more public than they've ever been. And the downside to that is now more of a case can be made for fighter pay, and there's more ammunition for those who would have fighters unionize. So they, if that's the case, they wouldn't be doing that unless the upside were huge. And I don't know if that means that we're going to take this thing public to ultimately sell it and come out from under it. So it doesn't matter if we open that can of worms, because we're going to sell it anyway. So it'll be somebody else's problem down the road. But I that's the thing. The big thing that stuck out to me is that the books, for lack of a better way of putting it, the books are getting opened somewhat. And that can't help suppression of fighter pay.
I'll play devil's advocate. I think, you know, if you have a company that's public, let's just talk general business sense. You want to keep your expenses low and your profits high. So if your expenses are fighter pay, and you know roughly what they're paying, you want them to lower them, you have an opportunity to voice your concerns. And I think there's going to be more people voicing those opinions now. Are they going to, you know, for lack of a better term, micromanage that way? Who knows? But, you know, again, we said this from the outset, we're pro fighters getting paid. So hopefully in the end, that's something that happens. But I see this, you know, you get a company, they go public, people are a little bit more stringent on the books. And now all of a sudden, you might even have to pay less, or you might want to pay less for the talent. When, again, if those alleged reported numbers that I saw on the Underground Whisper Networks of the world, for most of those fighters that fought last weekend, you have to even just think about critical thinking. They're making their UFC debuts. They're coming from Contender Series. You had three Performance Institute fighters coming over from China. You have to assume that all of those debuting fighters aren't getting paid hand over fist. It's cheap talent. They're big fights. You had that Carnelosi Liang Na fight to start off the card. That was bonkers. I mean, Carnelosi was fighting with a dislocated disc or fractured disc, herniated disc, whatever it was. She was fighting under extreme pain, had an insane fight, and got paid, you know, peanuts compared to the fighters up at the top. So in the end, I don't know if this is going to help. I don't know if it's going to hurt it, but it'll be interesting to see how it goes moving forward. I mean, 5% growth in one day, that's pretty good. So we'll have to see how it plays out over the upcoming months and years, really.
So just in case, this is my great fear right now as we move on to sparring sessions. My great fear right now is that I'm outside. It's a beautiful day in Phoenix. I think it's like 95, 94. There's these like flies going around, and I feel like I'm going to have a Mike Pence moment where like one's going to like land right here, and then I'm going to get like memed all over Twitter. But
John,
so
eight,
I'm like sick of
the
moving.
Fly eight.
All right, Craig, we move on officially to sparring sessions. Let's talk about Craig's favorite fighter, Jake Paul. Listen, at UFC 261, him and Daniel Cormier got into it. The question for sparring sessions is this. You have a Jake Paul signed boxing glove?
No, I have his next opponent, though.
Who, Art Jimmerson? One
Eric Ashe.
Eric Ashe.
Yeah.
So let's talk. Yeah, you got him in there with Butterbean, huh?
Yeah, I actually have a Butterbean signed glove.
You
came
want him
four
to,
rounds.
You want him to go in there, go out like Johnny Knoxville and get knocked dead and start snoring?
Right in a department store.
All right, so Cormier and Jake Paul squared off, if you will, at UFC 261. Cormier went over there and kind of like leaned on him. Jake Paul, to be honest, played it as good as you can. Cormier saying, if you want to fight me, fight an MMA match. Jake Paul's like, what'd you come over here for? If you want to run it, then run it. Let's do it right here, which I'm sure that's not what he was. He didn't have that energy when Cormier was in front of him, but it's easy to say on Errol Hawani's Zoom call. So here's the question for sparring sessions, and then we'll get a little more into Jake Paul. What's next for him? Should Daniel Cormier even be wasting his time with Jake Paul? I mean, does it raise his brand? Is there any – first, give me the upside, because obviously the easy answer is no, he shouldn't be. But is there any upside to this?
I can see it in the headlines now. 42-year-old goes viral on TikTok. Like, that's the only upside out of any of this. Like, really – like, you were born in 1979. Why do you want to fight a kid in his early 20s that's not an MMA fighter? What – why? Let's say here, hypothetical here, Daniel Cormier does get a fight with Jake Paul. They do fight in MMA, and Daniel Cormier absolutely mops the floor with him in like 30 seconds. Where's the upside there?
Right.
Like, does Daniel Cormier get a huge YouTube following? Does he get a huge TikTok following other than like the cupcake dance thing? No, none of that's going to happen. Does Daniel Cormier go on like the Today Show? Does he get a big spot on like daytime TV, or does he become the new Conan O'Brien? No, because it's going to be a flash in the pan and then it's gone. So
here's the beauty of what you just said. He puts all those things at risk fighting Jake Paul, and more importantly, confronting him, you know, again, quoting Chael, you know, Daniel Cormier was there to do a job, right? So now he leaves his job to go confront Jake Paul. Like, it just seemed like, you know, we hear this all the time, and it's been said relentlessly for years, but it's, you know, king doesn't bother himself with the opinion, the lion doesn't bother itself with the opinion of the sheep, or whatever it is, that he's kind of going down to, like, for me, he would only look bad in fighting Jake Paul, and he's just kind of, somebody at some point has to forget about the money and just say, what? Why would I even want to fight this kid?
Like, that would be if I decided today, you know, my wife, she's an esthetician. If I decided today, you know what? Biggest beauty channel on YouTube, it's on. It's go time. We're going to totally wipe them out. We're going to mop the floor with them. What if I'm successful? What does that do for me? Do you think the Beauty Channel fans are going to start watching Fight Night picks? Do you think they're going to care about MMA? Daniel Cormier, you beat Jake Paul. Do you think the Jake Paulers, or whatever they call themselves, do you think they're really going to be invested in the Daniel Cormier brand? Do you think they're all going to flock to Stillwater, Oklahoma? My second Stillwater reference all week. And when I made the first one, I thought, is anybody going to bite on it? And then I started to get the Instagram messages. People appreciated it. So shouts to Perry, Stillwater, Edmond, Oklahoma City, all the lovely places in Oklahoma. You're great. But yeah, I just don't see a reason for any of this. And I the upside is minimal.
So we can agree that Daniel Cormier shouldn't be wasting his time with Jake Paul. So then who should be? Because, you know, we can't just stop talking about Jake Paul. He's too big of a star, and the people love Jake Paul talk.
Easy. Easy answer. Real easy answer.
Real quick, yeah. Before you give that answer, his theory is it's Nate Diaz and then it's Conor McGregor. Do you see that playing out?
No, it's KSI.
You think Paul?
Yeah, I think Jake Paul has to fight KSI because KSI has that fluky win over Logan Paul. I thought Logan Paul won the fight. I had the illegal punch, whatever. But the weird thing about this whole celebrity boxing is logic doesn't matter because Logan Paul is going to fight Floyd Mayweather. So what even matters? I mean, by that logic, who's KSI going to fight next? Manny Pacquiao? Is that how that works? I don't know. But to me, listen, you got to avenge your brother's loss. So to me, Jake Paul should fight KSI. I think, again, you're still going to get eyeballs out of that from both sides of the pond and beyond. We'll make that a saying. But apart from that, like, I don't need to see Jake Paul fighting Nate Diaz or, I don't know, Leon Edwards, Khamzat Chimaev, Nick Diaz. I could list a litany of fighters. I don't need to see him fight.
Yeah, I think that he's smart to stay in the MMA world because your boxers are going to tune him up. That's clear. I think that I don't hate the KSI thing because I think sometimes, you know, when everybody thinks you're going to zig, you should zag. And that would definitely be a zag. Because everyone's expecting Nate or Jorge or I think BJ Penn would be an interesting one. But again, now we're getting – well, BJ's got hands. The problem is –
And they work, but I don't need to fight them.
BJ's fought at heavyweight before. But yeah, I think – guys, just to give you some perspective, I was going to say this earlier, the Daniel Cormier-Jake Paul thing. I'm Daniel Cormier's age. Craig's Jake Paul's age. And we joke all the time about our age difference. So, I mean, that's kind of what you're dealing with. I'm older than Daniel Cormier. But so my point is that I think that I don't hate the KSI thing. I don't think that's what's next. But it's going to be like, you know, it's going to be Nate, Jorge, Cowboy. I mean, I think that's kind of what we're looking at here. That's probably what's going to be next. All right. Featured segment time. Speaking of zigging when people think you're going to zag or zagging when people think you're going to zig, the featured segment this week is on the recap show. I mentioned to Matt, and yeah, we went long. I missed the kid, for Christ's sakes. Get off my back. I'm the reason why I missed him, but you know, whatever. I'm an absentee father. So we talked about that there was probably three future Hall of Famers that fought on that card in the sense of that won and walked away with belts. So what I'm going to do, and we'll try and get through this as quickly as we can, I want to talk about who on the UFC roster right now is a future Hall of Famer. And here's the thing. The only caveat that I'm going to give you here is they have to have earned it by now. It's not like, oh, this kid's probably going to be one. So we could go through the divisions. Can we assume that everyone – no, I guess we can't assume that.
Just go pound for pound.
Yeah, but okay, let's go pound for pound. Kamaru Usman, do you think if he retired tomorrow, he's a Hall of Famer?
Yep.
Volkanovski?
No.
Adesanya?
Yep.
Ngannou?
There's some weird people in that Hall of Fame.
This is Craig Allen takes over the UFC Hall of Fame and puts the right people in. No.
Oh, me?
Yeah, no. Like you and I run the UFC Hall of Fame. We're taking it seriously. Writers are voting. You got to get in there. That would be a great thing, by the way. Poirier.
Yep.
Miocic.
Goat. Yep.
Blachowicz.
No.
Holloway.
Yes.
Figueiredo.
No dice.
Whitaker. Tough one.
No.
Jan.
Nope.
J- Justin Gaethje.
Nope.
Aljamain Sterling.
No chance.
Connor.
Yes. And then your number one pound for pound is John Jones. So yeah.
Yeah. Connor, let me tell you about Connor. When Connor goes into the UFC Hall of Fame, they're going to, it's typically they do it at like, you know, the Hard Rock, or they do it at these different places. It'll be at T-Mobile when Connor goes to the Hall of Fame. Let me just see if we can find some people that are kind of outliers. Let's go into the women's divisions because they're not listed. Actually, we got women's pound for pound. Amanda, obviously.
Yep.
Valentina Shevchenko.
Yep.
Nama Yunus.
Yep.
I agree, and I'm glad that you answered that so quickly. Zhang Weili.
No.
Here's an interesting one. Joanna. Jan Jacek.
100%.
Jessica Andrade.
Yes.
Wow.
She's competed in three different divisions. She's had title fights in two of them. She's a former champ. Yeah.
It's going to be a down year when she gets in. Jermaine Durand to me.
Former champ, but no.
Holly Holm.
100% yes.
So what do we got here? Ladd, no.
They're Chukagian. All no's. Unless you want to... So if you go through the rest, like you said, Ladd, Chukagian, Yan Xiaonan, Mackenzie Dern, Carlos Sparza, Calvillo, Gadea. The only one you could maybe make a case for is Carlos Sparza. But if Carlos Sparza goes in, so does Nico Montano. To an extent.
The connection there is they're both the champ, the inaugural champs of a division. You know, I think that if she were to get, am I just overrating Claudia Gadelha's career just because she was close with Joanna a couple times? Felt like maybe.
Yeah, like, listen, it's not the NFL, because to me, I'm not I wear this Browns jersey, but like, there's so many people in the NFL Hall of Fame. So, I don't know, is Claudia Gadelha like the Jim Kelly of MMA?
Probably. Yeah, I'm looking really quickly through. The interesting thing about now is that these divisions are, I don't want to say they're cleaned out, but they are, they don't have a lot of guys that have been around for a while.
Which is good. Which
meaning, like, light heavyweight doesn't have Shogun anymore, you know, in the rankings at least. Weidman in?
Yeah, Weidman's in. Like, I mean, looking through it.
Masvidal?
No.
Robbie Lawler?
Dos Anjos? Yeah, I'd say Robbie Lawler is, yeah. Like, you could say the fight against Rory McDonald, like, that was a fight that gets inducted into that weird wing. RDA?
I got a tough one for you, Tony Ferguson.
Interim champ.
Won a lot of big fights.
I mean, Carlos Condit was an interim champ. Did we put him in too? He had a lot of good fights.
Cowboy.
Like that one against Matt Brown recently. Cowboy probably gets in based on the way that the UFC works.
Jose Aldo probably gets in. Frankie Edgar.
Yeah, well, I've considered him a top lightweight of all time. So yeah.
Cruz gets in. Who else?
This makes for great podcasting.
No, we're doing good. They'll hang out. Benavidez? No.
No.
That's pretty much all I can see. That
Brad Tavares? I mean, listen, you're his biggest guy. Like, he's the hardest hitter going at middleweight.
Yeah. Listen, I put Brad Tavares in the Hall of Fame of pulling dime pieces after I saw his girlfriend at a World Series of Fighting event. So he's in another Hall of Fame. He's fine. All right, Craig, let's move on. For the gram, Conor McGregor cashed out this week for Proper 12. The reports on the above ground yelling network is $600 million, and then he also in a Hall of Fame level petty move, he donated to a Louisiana Boys and Girls Club, not going through Dustin Poirier's foundation. So, talk to me about both the Proper 12 cash out and the donation to the Boys and Girls Club.
I mean, you're going to slight Dustin Poirier if you got a fight booked against them. That's, you know, I'd say that's cool, but that's a move Conor McGregor would make. Just like how he bought that pub and then won't let that guy go back to that pub. Like, you know, prime pettiness at its best. But for a guy to cash out like that, John, if you gave me $10,000, I wouldn't take another fight, let alone a cut of $600 million. So Like, you give me $100, I wouldn't take a fist fight. That makes sense to me. I got to say this now. We're 45 minutes into it. Verbatim, I read a quote that Cody Stamann said about Merab Dvalishvili that's here somewhere. And the gist of it was he called Merab a weird little guy. So I read this, then I attributed the quote, and then I got a comment under it. You shouldn't call that guy a little guy. You guys should be professional podcasters. These guys will break you like twigs. Just trying to bring a little bit of levity into the situation, guy. Like, just trying to have a good time, man. Sometimes these predictions, they get a little dry. But for Conor McGregor, good stuff. For me, apparently I get squashed and broken like a twig.
For the record, since when has podcasting been a profession that has deemed so much professionalism? Man, these YouTube comments sure want professionals behind the mics, but, you know, we digress. All right, I got a quote for you, my friend, which is to say Tyson Fury and Francis Ngannou. Here's the quote. This is a message to Francis Ngannou and the UFC, guys. You want some of this Gypsy King money? You know where to come and find it. You want some of this Gypsy King power? I'll give it to you any time, any place, anywhere, 7 days a week and twice on Sunday, you big, ugly dosser. To which Francis Ngannou said, I'll take care of Johnny Bones Jones first, then come after Tyson Fury. There's a lot of these fights that we hate. I don't know. I would tune in for this one. I tuned in for Jake Paul and Ben Askren, so I'm a bad judge. But what do you think about this? You think there's anything to this, or this is just two guys didn't have anything else going on that day? Let's get our names in the headlines. Let's have Craig and John talking about us.
Wow. What's Anthony Joshua saying? Boring stuff to nobody?
Like, yep.
Yeah, that's kind of his MO. I love Anthony Joshua fights, by the way. Like, I always tune in for them. But, yeah, I mean, Fury's got those two fights coming up if they're still going down. And Francis Ngannou's got his hands full of Jones and maybe Miocic again. So, yeah, it's two guys talking. If you want to see this fight, go play it on, what is it, UFC 4 now? I've got it. I played it a few times. It's cool. You could do it. You can make it happen if you want to see it. But Francis Ngannou's one of those guys. I just want to say this. He's always talked about more than MMA, and that really boxing was the calling. So I think for him, he's one of those guys that maybe he goes full Clay Collard and leaves MMA for boxing for a little while.
And you know, the irony of that is that Fury was, he trained with Till, right? A couple years ago, he was in there with Till kind of screwing around. So, I mean,
Aspinall. Yeah. With him in boxing. Yeah.
They both have shown an interest in the other sports. So maybe they could come together. I doubt we'll ever see any of these guys in an octagon, because, you know, that's serious business, and that's something they don't want to fuck around with, but, you know, smartly so. But, you know, we might see the other way around. If, you know, listen, if Ngannou beats Jones and Stipe a third time, he's going to be a worldwide star if he isn't already. And that makes for, you know, at some point, Tyson Fury is going to run out of opponents that he hasn't beaten. And instead of fighting some bum nobody's ever heard of, that's a boxer, he can fight, you know, somebody that people have heard of, in Francis Ngannou. All right, I'm going to defer to you on posting to the book, because I know a little bit about this. You seem to know a little bit more. Cowboy Cerrone and Diego Sanchez, there seems to be some problems. Obviously, they were teammates at Jackson Wink. And I guess the story that I read was that Cowboy was upset because Diego, I guess, went through New Mexico and was, like, ripping pictures of him and Cowboy in restaurants or something. So now Cowboy's like, you know, you got to eat your words. Where does the fight stand right now? Because somebody fell out, right? Is Diego? Is that where we're at?
Yeah, Diego fell out. But then, so if you go on Diego Sanchez's Instagram, and trust me, it's a weird place. He posted 5 hours ago, Fight Island Part 1, in a meeting with commentaries and my team. I first discussed pandemic preparations for my upcoming bout with Jake Matthews. I was asked why Stephen Bonner's in the corner, how that came about. My coach, manager, and mentor at School of Self-Awareness, at Joshua Fabia Nobody, spelled K-N-O-W, body, addresses the room about the negative commentating and biased narrative structuring, which there was a lot of negativity. And again, you might think that his coaching methods are weird, unorthodox, and don't really have a lot to do with MMA. But the point of it is, that was pretty dirty, right? to post the dirty laundry out there like that. So Diego posts that, and then he posts part two 7 months ago. I never planned to post or share, but my name and legacy is on the line. And then you go through his Instagram story, and he's got one. He puts at Cowboy Cerrone versus Michelle Pereira UFC, at Mike Mav 22, at Jake Matthews, and see what happens. Best of luck. Then there's a picture of Diego Sanchez with an ice cream cone that says paid in full. Then you keep going through this, and it's like, what really happened? And then there's school self-awareness stuff, and then there's more videos that just, I don't know what they're all about. Just FYI, anybody who defends Josh Fabia's actions is not anybody, is immediately getting blocked. I don't know what that's about. And then his last post, and John, this is where I leave. He goes, free at last, free at last. At Bellator MMA, at ONE Championship, at Bare Knuckle FC, at Brave MMA, at the official Terrace Set Tapia. I don't know what that's about. I'm going to have to click on that one in my spare time. All of this to say, I have no idea what's going on. And this guy's Instagram is very difficult to follow. Like, I can't. Teresa Tapia, who are you? Who are you? No idea. She has a lot of followers. That's all I got. A lot of followers. So, like 90,000 followers.
Do you think this helps the fight? Do you think the fight was going to be whatever the fight was? I mean, does it matter for does it matter for this fight? Like, I mean, was Diego Sanchez and Cowboy Cerrone ever going to be anything? Or, like, I mean, I kind of looked at it. I kind of looked at it like Dana or Cowboy or whoever was kind of, like, giving Diego a proper send-off. It's his last fight. Yeah. We'll put him in there with a name. But now that there's all this beef, I can't understand why you, like.
I mean, I'm absolutely lost, and I like to think that my brain doesn't get scrambled that easily, but right now I'm just kind of no man's land after reading all of that. Teresa Tapia, I apologize for the pronunciation, was Johnny's wife.
Johnny Tapia. Johnny, Tapia, yeah, you got it.
Boxer. Mm-hmm. So that clears that up. Now I got one answer. I still have so many questions. The fight would have made sense, right? Because we've had a few fights like this recently. We had, like I talked about earlier, the Carlos Condit fight against Matt Brown. This is one of those fights. Like, hey, what's going to happen? Well, two legends are going to duke it out. One guy's going to win. Now it's weird. Now it's just weird. Do I need it? I don't know. Did I need Clay Guida, BJ Penn, though? Not really, but I got it.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to start the conversation, and then we'll go to finish strong. So, again, you know, I'm doing a lot of quote and chale, so here's another one. He said on his YouTube channel this week that at the pinnacle of the sport is when the results of the fights don't matter. So it's, are you a contender? Are you a champion? Those make you relevant. He also talked about placement on the card, which I don't pay enough attention to. Where are you at on the card and that the relevance of that? He thinks that's important, more so important than your ranking. And then he said, you know, can you be booked and co-headline or headline fights regardless of whether you won or lost your last fight or last couple fights? No one cares if you've lost your last couple fights and you can still get a co-main event. The reason why he brought this up, his example was Nick Diaz, which is, it's true about Nick. So I guess my question to you, one is, do you agree with Chael's assessment of that as the pinnacle of the sport where you can get a high profile fight regardless of your previous outcomes? And two, if so, who are the fighters that either now fit the bill or who have fit the bill in the past?
I'm going to give you a really bad example, but I'm going to tie it back. So if if record doesn't matter and you can lose some fights, I got a fighter for you, John, that's 1-4 in their last five, and they're fighting in the feature prelims this weekend. Randa Markos, who's 10-10-1. And if you go by the UFC's logic, she's 10-11-1. She had a 3-rounder that she lost against Rose Namajunas on The Ultimate Fighter. Now, why is she in this spot, you may ask? Because she's a name that's been around since 2014 fighting in the UFC, and she's taking on a debuting fighter in Luana Pinheiro. So that's cool stuff, but that's why she's there. That does lend a little bit of credence into what Chael's saying, because enough people will recognize Randa as, okay, she's halfway competent. She used to win one, lose one for the longest time, and wrestlers cause her issues like, Murata did in her last fight. Olympic caliber wrestler right there. I got grilled for not saying that in the prediction video. So here's the opportunity for the early stoppage fans that are almost an hour into this, that I didn't praise Murata enough in a video that didn't really depend on her. The point of this is, though, yeah, there's a lot of validity in what Chael's saying. Again, Tyron Woodley. He lost and lost and lost, but he's a big name. And at one point, he was on that roll, like, this guy, GSP was the greatest, but if Tyron keeps winning, Tyron could be the greatest. And then he lost and he lost and he lost. And then you're fighting Vicente Luque, but you're still a big enough name that you can pull and draw eyes. So, you know, who are two fighters that fit this bill? Randa Markos. You've got Nick Diaz there. Like, who's another fighter that we can think of that's lost recently? I mean, we went through the rankings. Geez, I don't know. Conor McGregor, he's lost some, but he still pulls huge eyes. Like, McGregor, who else? Thiago Santos.
Well, let's talk about the big ones, right? So we got Conor. We have Nick. We have Nate. Jorge Masvidal, at least for the time being. Can lose. He's lost his last two. Now they were both to Kamaru Usman, but he's lost them. Cowboy.
I RDA. Would say
Cowboy, RDA, Gaethje, I think can get booked. These are guys, I think, that now the irony is that Cowboy's about to fight Diego Sanchez. But if you really needed a co-main event for a UFC fight night, could you not put Cowboy in there against whoever?
Yeah.
I don't think I'm not ready to put Kevin Holland up there yet. I'm not ready to put. What do you think about Kevin Lee?
Oh yeah, future champ. Yeah, Macy Barber. She's there. I mean, she's got a wild fight coming up against Miranda Maverick. I wouldn't assign that sheet if it was coming across the table, but she did.
No, but do you think these are people that you could put in co-headlining spots regardless of their previous outcomes? Kevin Lee.
Yeah, like there's a lot of fighters out there that you could do that with. Regard win, lose, draw, whatever. Like there's quite a few fighters out there. I mean, even heavyweight now. Did they just cut these two fighters? Yes, they did. But look at it with JDS and Overeem. They rode that for as long as they could until it wasn't financially feasible. And then I'm going to throw one loop into what Chael said, and this is the last thing I have for you. If you look at the next Bellator card, it's a good card. It really is. Like, you got the Rumble and Romero fight. You've got Juan Archuleta's taking on Pettis for the belt. It's a really good card. But if you bring up the prelims to that card, this actually makes me physically ill and upset. And this is the type of thing that I harp on Bellator for because I love them. But this is what I get upset at. The second or third fight, I believe it is the third fight on the prelims, is Lorenz Larkin and Costello Van Steenis. The last time I checked, Costello Van Steenis is this close to a title shot, and Lorenz Larkin's been there for the longest time. Granted, he didn't fight in 2020, but Lorenz Larkin has headlined Bellator shows before, and he was a big deal for the UFC. And the last time I also checked, he was pretty successful in Bellator. I have no sweet clue why they have a four-fight main card, but they bury that on the prelims where nobody's going to find it. And it makes me mad. Put that in a feature prelim spot.
You know, as I'm looking through this and trying to figure out if there's anybody else on this list, it gets interesting for me because the thing that's fascinating about three of those guys, Nick, Nate, and Jorge, is that they were never champions in the UFC. That's what makes their appeal that much. Same thing with Cowboy.
Same thing with Randa Markos.
Same thing with Gaethje. You keep putting Randa Markos in this group. It's killing me. So anyway, I would say, no, listen. Now, the thing they all have in common is they're action fighters, right? So if you make this list, Nick, Nate, Jorge, Gaethje, Ferguson, these guys are guys that you're going to be able to pull out of, you know, mothballs for years, blow the dust off, and then put them out there. Now, the fascinating thing about them is they're not champions because some of the names that I was going to give you are guys like Max Holloway, but he's a former champion. Cody Garbrandt, but he's a former champion. Frankie Edgar, what? But he's a former champion. So these are guys that, like, you know, yes, you could make the same claim about them, but they have that championship to back Robbie Lawler. But he's a champion. So I think the guys that did it without the belt, it's a little more impressive, right? It holds a little more weight.
Yeah, for sure. Underground King status, but even he won a championship.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the Underground King and what's up with him these days, but maybe we'll touch on it and finish strong. All right, I got a pretty in-depth finish strong for you, even though the rundown doesn't say so. I'll let you start because we just brought the Underground King. One in flames on TNT. Talk to me about it.
Like, I mean, let's go from the first show to the fourth show and forget about two and three. The first show, you have Demetrius Johnson finally getting his opportunity at the belt, and then he gets starched. And you have Eddie Alvarez fighting Lapicus, and he lands those shots that are to the neck, and were they to the back of the head? I don't know, but he lost by DQ, and then it gets overturned to no contest. And then he goes out there last night, and it was live. It wasn't by tape delay. I mean, John, the reason why I bring this up and we left it to finish strong, and I'm going to make a bold assumption here, and you can get mad if I'm wrong, but did you watch it?
No.
But you saw the highlights on Twitter. And that's the perfect, that's exactly why I wanted to talk about it here, because you didn't have to watch it. Did you see that finishing sequence where Eddie Alvarez should have probably lost that fight due to TKO?
Yes.
It was insane. And his opponent looked amazing. He really did look good. You look at the win streak too. It's great. Like, really good guy to be fighting. But man, like, listen, Tim Nasty took a little bit of his soul. Conor McGregor did the same thing. Michael Chandler got a little bit of a piece. And now to a North American audience, Eddie Alvarez is losing to guys that they've never heard of. So for one championship, they're going on TNT. Johnson loses. The weird thing happens to Alvarez. Okay, that's fine. We clean up the dust. We have a good second card. We have a good third card. Then we go out there with a banger. Umar Khan, a.k.a. Rug Rug, loses. And he gets throat punched at the end of a, you know, at the end of a round. And it's weird. And he's going to appeal it. But did you see that? Like, that looked legal to me. And then people were hitting me up in the comments like, hey, what's going to happen? I said, it's going to be a TKO win for his opponent. And lo and behold, TKO win, because it was right as the bell went and the referee didn't end it. It's the referee's job. It's not the fighter's job. So Rug Rug loses, huge star. Eddie Alvarez loses, huge star. And then in the main event, he wasn't favored to win, but Ong Lan Song loses, your former double champ. And it's not just he loses to somebody.
I saw that. I thought that was the song that you sing on New Year's. Isn't that, am I getting that wrong?
He was supposed to fight, hear me out, he was supposed to fight Vitaly Big Dash. It was going to be a big fight, Big Dash, COVID complications, what have you. The point is, Ong lost his middleweight belt to DeRitter. Then we go into this fight, and he loses his light heavyweight belt to DeRitter. Now, DeRitter was favored to win. He was a minus 180, minus 180 favorite. But there's your double, your former double champ, Myanmar's biggest sporting star, pushed to the wayside. Eddie Alvarez, pushed to the wayside. Rug Rug, pushed to the wayside. What does one do with all of this? Like, do you just create new stars? Because I think that they might try and do that. But at the same time, you built these guys up. You promoted them. Like, what do you do now?
Well, I have no idea what they're going to do, because I don't really know what they're doing now.
What's Twitter going to do?
What is Twitter going to do? You know, I've said this before to you, and the UFC doesn't always do a great job of doing this, but, you know, Bill Walsh once said famously, I'd rather get rid of you a year early than a year late. And I'll deal with the fact that you have some success initially when you leave me, because I know that you're pretty much finished. You'll have that 1 year of where you try to, you know, play good out of spite to show me that you shouldn't, I shouldn't have cut you, but in the end, I know it got weird there for a second.
You're kind of like that kid, you know, you win, you know, you do.
Yeah.
Like I think like Derek Jeter, he went too far, right?
Well, no, but I think the UFC did a good job on this one, and they got rid of the guys when they should have, even though they had a little bit left in the tank. And we're seeing that bear itself out. Now, my one thing that I will say as a caveat to that statement is I used to have sort of a loose theory that when Asian fighters came to the United States to fight, they never did well because of the travel. You could make the same argument going the other way. And I don't think that, you know, as far as I know, Johnson and Alvarez and any of those guys are living in Asia. So they're dealing with the same thing, only in reverse. So there could be something to that. All right. That was a finish strong that was more so than a flurry. It was just a kind of a drawn out round. But it was important to say. So let me hit you with a couple quick ones. Give me your thoughts. Lyoto Machida wants to return to 185 for a potential trilogy fight with Musashi. Any interest?
No, he gets smoked by Bader, and it hurt my soul. No, I don't want to see it.
I talked to Matt. I've talked to you. Kevin Holland is looking to jump into the Cerrone fight. Does this kid need to slow down, or should he just keep jumping on opportunities and hoping for the best?
That's the right one, but that's the only one.
Okay. Logan Paul, Floyd Mayweather, official in June. Your thoughts?
I paid $39.99 to watch his younger brother fight Ben Askren. I'm probably going to pay to watch the older brother fight Floyd, but it's just to see Floyd win a fight.
Here's my thing that scares me about this fight is that ever since Floyd had that fight with that kid over in Japan, and it wasn't really on the level, and there was a lot of weird rules.
You couldn't watch it in North America?
Yeah, it was just, I thought that that fight wasn't on the up and up. Like, I felt like the Conor fight was on the up and up, but I felt like that fight wasn't.
And well.
Now what he does moving forward is always going to scare me, and I don't know why he would fight Logan Paul. I don't get it. And side note, isn't Logan Paul bigger than Jake Paul size-wise?
Logan's like a 190. If I'm not mistaken, Logan, yeah, he's a heavy guy, and Floyd's not. Now, that fight against Tenshin Asakawa, think what you will. I mean, Floyd mopped the floor with him at the end of the day. Like, that's what the footage shows. So let's just assume everything's above board and it was legit. I mean, Floyd still had it in that fight.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was just all the circumstances around it. All right.
Yeah, it was weird.
Another rumor, Tyson versus Lennox Lewis in September. You have any interest in that?
Yeah. I mean, Canada's best boxer next to, like, who? Adonis Stevenson? Do you want me to go through a list of Canadian boxing greats? Well, I'll claim Lennox Lewis as Canadian. So, yeah, I'm all for it. And I will be, listen, combat sports, media member, whatever. I'm a fan that night, and Lennox Lewis is going to win that fight.
Let's not forget Arturo Gatti.
And Arturo Gatti. I was thinking heavyweights or higher weight classes.
Marshawn Lynch investing in the PFL. Your thoughts?
I told you what I thought about Wiz Khalifa. Now! I told you what I thought about Wiz Khalifa before the event. Did you watch the intro to that?
No, PFL's
going on right now as we're doing this, so I will watch my guy, Canadian Rory McDonald, fight tonight against Curtis Millender. And I did watch Tom Lawler, who has a great interview on this channel. He got beaten by Shoeface pretty bad. But that intro with Wiz Khalifa was really cool. And the PFL's intro for the whole show, it was really good. Like, it drew me in. And I wasn't expecting much. I thought it was cool. So for Marshawn Lynch to be another set, so you have Ray Lewis, Wiz Khalifa, Marshawn Lynch, all these celebrities kind of investing, I think it is kind of cool at the end of the day.
Here's the weird thing about the PFL, and we've talked about this before, so I won't stay on it too long, but, like, there seems to be, like, this expectation of investors in the PFL that there isn't in the UFC. Like, if Mark Wahlberg invests in the UFC, nobody's like, oh, Mark Wahlberg's investing. Now Dana White's going to be in a movie. But it's like, when people invest in the PFL, it's like, well, Kevin Hart's going to interview this guy or have him in a skit, and Lynch is going to work out with these guys, and Ray Lewis is going to do this. Here's the thing. The PFL is the most fascinating test case
for me ever.
This is why. I feel like they make all the right decisions. And they do a lot of really, really, hold on. They do a lot of really, really cool things. But their roster is what their roster is. So I think that I like the fact that they're leaning into the analytics. I like the fact they're bringing this guy in or that guy in. Their graphics are good. They got Couture. They got Florian. They got O'Connell. I just like a lot of the decisions they're making, but in the end, their roster's their roster. And can a lot of great decisions overcome a pedestrian roster is the question.
The key point there is the pun, if it was intended or not, but a lot of great decisions. There's going to be a lot of decisions because they have a lot of wrestlers. So I could see that happening, but I agree with you. Right up until the point where you look at those analytics and some of those numbers, it's like puking numbers onto a screen. And like I said, I was a baseball card kid that would memorize stats. They're cool. Some of them are pointless, but to a lot of people, I can see them just looking at it and going, why? So, yeah.
So we'll get you out of here on this. We'll end the show. Killashaw out with a cut over his eye. My dog Casey's been great the whole show. Here she is showing her ass. Thoughts on Killershaw being out? Is it just whatever? We got to wait a little bit longer.
Well wishes, happy trails. Hopefully, Fat Tyler's doing well.
All right, guys, there you have it. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FMP. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. The show was fat like Tyler. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, say something witty.
Check out John's dog's Twitter at SM Cornerman Casey. Sunday morning Cornerman Casey.
Check it out. She's big on Snapchat. See if you can find her. All right, guys, we'll see you next week. Peace.